iAmerica Radio Network.
This is iAmerica Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. A long-awaited report on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction lacks any evidence of a gun. The CIA said the report from former UN weapons inspector David Kay won't have any firm conclusions on whether Saddam Hussein was hiding the banned weapons. During an appearance today on ABC's Good Morning America, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice says the findings in the report are not surprising.
This is a progress report by David Kay, and so it's not surprising that it's not going to come to any firm conclusions. He has miles of documentation still to go through. He has hundreds and maybe even thousands of people still to interview.
Rice is also playing down a new flap over comments that Secretary of State Colin Powell made in early 2001. At that time, Powell said Iraq had not developed any significant capability on weapons of mass destruction. A mixed view of the nation's economy is seen in two economic reports released today. New orders for long-lasting manufactured goods fell last month. First-time jobless claims dropped, with much of the decline being heaped on last week's hurricane Isabel. Last night's debate of candidates for the California recall election was anything but stiff and formal. All five candidates mixed their messages with attacks on the other candidates. Independent candidate Arianna Huffington took issue with the Bush administration, saying the state's residents needed someone to fight in Washington for them. Arnold Schwarzenegger told her she was in the wrong state and needed to go to the East Coast for that battle. As he continued to speak over her, Huffington said, "I know this is the way you treat women, but not now." The debate's moderator called it a direct and personal attack and allowed Schwarzenegger to respond.
I just realized that I have a perfect part for you in Terminator 4. That's it.
I think at this point, this is not, ladies and gentlemen, this is not Comedy Central.
The exchange was one of several Schwarzenegger had with Huffington during the debate.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it, because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What can you do? See your doctor. Because a simple blood test can detect the problem. And with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Attorneys for the Chief Justice at the center of Alabama's Ten Commandments Monument debate will appear in court today. They're expected to ask for more time for the judicial ethics case against their client, Roy Moore. Last month, Moore refused a federal court order to remove a monument to the Ten Commandments from the Alabama Judicial Building. One of the students involved in the Glenbrook North High School powder puff football hazing incident last spring has been found guilty of three misdemeanor battery counts. The Chicago Sun-Times reports the 17-year-old was sentenced to 1 year of supervision and 50 hours of community service, in addition to drug abuse evaluation.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live. But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work, to a mall, to the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Lawmakers have quickly criticized a federal court's ruling that blocked the national Do Not Call list. The judge in the case ruled the Federal Trade Commission doesn't have the authority to create and enforce the list. Representative John Dingell of Michigan said the judge made an error and Congress will work quickly to deal with the ruling by the time the list is supposed to take effect October 1st. Federal health officials are looking more closely at a pill that's been approved to combat narcolepsy. An FDA advisory panel will be reviewing the safety and effectiveness of Cephalon's Provigil for the treatment of excessive sleepiness. And after a three-year absence, Billy Crystal will return as the host of the Academy Awards. Crystal joked he's had a nice long sleep and is ready to return. This would make the comic's eighth return to the Oscars. The Oscars will be presented on February 28th. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh, no. One size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 1,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, friends, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Greetings to patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations all across the United States, also from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming live on the Internet from a variety of Internet radio stations, including radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find all of that from our homepage at liberaltalkradio.com or progressivetalkradio.com or tomhartman.com. Any of them will get you to the same place. And from there, you can also drop in on our chat room where we have live discussion going on while the program's going on, something that I look to from time to time during the breaks and find sometimes very, very useful information, always fascinating conversations. Our first hour today, how badly will Bush's Iraq folly harm America's future? How badly, and why? Why? I think it's important to get into this. This whole issue of what's going on here. In our second hour, we're going to get into how do conservative and liberals view the difference view of the American promise. What is the difference there? We're going to have Arthur Blaustein on as our guest. In our third hour, Chris Mulligan, in our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, is going to tell us about the Skull and Bone Society and how it has infected our democracy, where it came from, what it's up to, what all these folks are about. If you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And our quote for the day from Benjamin Franklin, God grant that not only the love of liberty, but a thorough knowledge of the rights of man. Let me just pause there for a moment. I think that, one of the most important things that I'm trying to do with this program, and I believe we're accomplishing it if the feedback that we're getting is any indication, is to help people understand the underpinnings of democracy in the United States, to get the big picture, because most people just frankly don't have the time to study American history, don't have the time to really, people are working so hard just to trying to put their family, put their kids through school, pay the rent. So many Americans now, you have both people in the family working full time. You have sometimes people working two and three jobs.
It's not that Americans are dumb. It's Americans are just wiped out. I mean, you look at the productivity, look at the number of hours worked figures. And of course, the conservatives love to say, the Wall Street Journal, isn't this wonderful? Look at how hardworking the American people are. The downside of that. I mean, in France, you're required, as an employer is required to offer 5 weeks of paid vacation every year. And there are very strict rules about overtime. Not just France, most of Europe. I lived in Germany for a year, and fire talk, vacation time, vacation days, and Feierwochen, and the fire week, the vacation weeks and things. I mean, it's a big deal. And because of strong overtime laws, because of strong representation of labor, business is still very competitive. And you have a well-informed populace who has the time to pay attention to debate that goes beyond just the surface, who has time to read, who has time to spend time with their families, as we had in the United States from the 40s up until the late 70s, the early 80s. Basically, you know, during the golden age of the American middle class, until Reagan Bush came along and started just squeezing the blood out of the American middle class. So one of the things that I'm trying to do with this program is bring this back. I think this is the key to the solution. People say, well, what are the solutions? Let's not just complain, let's offer solutions. Yeah, absolutely. And the number one solution to the problems facing America is not going to be found in you and I sitting around and saying, well, let's hatch some brilliant scheme. Come on, we're not that naive. No. The number one solution is going to be found in people understanding the core concepts of American democracy in a constitutionally limited republic that brought about peace and prosperity for the better part of 50 years, that brought about the vitality of this country, that made us the beacon of liberty for the world, and how the loss of those values and the failure to understand those values by so many people in our society is causing much of the world to look at us with shock and horror. How could they be doing that? Well, the fact is they don't know. Today's New York Times, the lead editorial, the presidential bubble, talks about how George W. Bush never reads newspapers. It's not that he's dumb, it's that he's ignorant, he's uninformed. And we can't afford to have an American populace like that. You see the decisions that are being made by this administration that are just plain old flat-out ideological. You know, they're dancing to the tune of the false religion of conservatism, or uninformed and out of touch with reality. So on this program, bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle, my goal is to share a good solid grounding in the understanding of how America came about, what the visions and ideals of our founders are, and where we're going. So back to Ben Franklin's quote, because that's the context for it. He said, God grant that not only the love of liberty, but a thorough knowledge of the rights of man may pervade all the nations of the earth, so that a philosopher may set his foot anywhere on the surface of this planet and say, this is my country. Isn't that brilliant? Well, we have an interesting week here. I want to share with you just a couple of audio clips and then put them in context, because there is a remarkable and startling context to this, in my opinion. First of all, yesterday, Don Rumsfeld, speaking before Congress, talking about, you know, the $87 billion that he says they need. This is on top of the $80 billion, more or less, that's already been spent in Iraq, and on top of the $200 billion debt that we will inherit from Iraq. And Don Rumsfeld on this. Before I get into this, we have a caller on the line. Let's bring in Armin and see what his are on this. Armin in Bradenton, Florida has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Armin, welcome to the program. This is Tom Hartman. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Before I get to my points, I'd like to make about an AOL poll, if I may.
Sure.
There's a joke going around. You want to hear it real quick? It's
okay. If it's you know, appropriate for prime time.
Okay, well, apparently Bush and Cheney are making so much money off Iraq that Congress wants to put a bill through to rename it. You know what the new name would be?
What's that?
Iraq it.
Yes. Last night on NPR, Dan Shore went through this whole thing about how Bush has painted himself into a corner, and now he's going to the world hat in hand asking for troops, and they're going to Congress hat in hand asking for money. And he said, and so now it truly can be said that President Bush finds himself between Iraqi and a hard place, or between Iraq and a hard place. Iraq in a hard place. Anyway, forgive the attempt. Good one, Armin. Okay, what was your point about the AOL poll?
Well, they're running a poll right now, and the question is, should all felons be banned from voting? Well, 56% say yes. So what I'd like to see is some follow-up questions with that that would be really interesting, and they would be this. Should all felons be banned from being president? I'd love to hear that, and then I'd love one more that would say, should presidents that commit felonies be removed from office?
High crimes and misdemeanors, a felony is generally considered to be a high crime, so that provision's already in the Constitution, I'd say. The question that I would have, Armin, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's a good point. The question that I would have is, should corporations that commit felonies... And as I believe it was Arianna Huffington pointed out last night in the California debates, 56% of the, 300 and some odd, I forget the exact number, but more than half of the major corporations in California have been convicted of a felony, according to my recollection of what she said last night. And the statistics are in unequal protection. I don't have them right in front of me, but of the major corporations in America that have been convicted of a felony, it's huge. I mean, it's well over 20% of the top 2,000 corporations have been convicted of a major felony in the last decade. Should corporations that have been convicted of felonies be allowed to conduct business, period? Should they continue to exist, number one? Number two, should they be allowed to conduct business with the government? We have a situation where Halliburton has been convicted of felonies. Halliburton has paid some very, very large fines for defrauding the government just in the last couple of years. In fact, pretty sure I've got them right here. This is, now that you raise it, here we are, a GAO finding in 1997 that Halliburton billed the Army for questionable expenses for work in the Balkans, including charges of $85.98 per sheet of plywood that cost $14.06. A year 2000 follow-up report on the Balkans work that found Halliburton had inflated costs, including charges for cleaning some offices up to four times a day. $2 million in fines paid by Halliburton in February 2002 to resolve fraud claims involving work at Fort Ord, California. The Defense Department Inspector General and a federal grand jury had investigated allegations by a former employee that KBR, subsidiary of Halliburton, defrauded the government by millions of dollars by inflating prices for repairs and maintenance. And the Securities Exchange Commission is still investigating Halliburton's accounting practices, looking into an accounting change made in 1998 during Cheney's tenure as CEO. So the question for me is, should corporations that are felons or that have been convicted of crimes or that have plea bargained their way out of a conviction and paid huge fines be allowed to still participate in politics, to give money to politicians, to promote political campaigns, to give soft money to campaigns? I think no. I think absolutely not. In fact, I don't think any corporation should be allowed to participate in politics. Let the human beings do that. Only human beings can vote. Only human beings can run for office. Only human beings should be participating in politics. But we digress. How badly will Bush's Iraq folly hurt or harm America's future? Here, let's get into a couple of these quotes here. This first of all, Don Rumsfeld, he has this annoying habit of asking, somebody will ask him a question. If he doesn't like it, he'll ask his own question and give his own answer as if he's doing the interview. And he did that again before Congress yesterday.
Is $87 billion a great deal of money? Answer is yes. Can our country afford it? The answer is also yes.
Nobody asked that question.
We believe it is necessary for the security of our country and the stability of the world, and that the price of sending terrorists a message that we're not willing to spend what it takes to do or what it takes, that we value comfort or money more than freedom, would be far greater.
So that's number one. We got a couple of these, and I want to share with you what's the story behind the story here. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Straight to the heart of truth. We'll be right back.
Radio Shack Dictionary of Gizmos. Today's definition, the plug-a-roony, as described by Vanessa Williams.
It's the gizmo that turns your car lighter into a supercharger, because some of us can easily outtalk the average wireless phone battery.
So at Radio Shack, when you ask for...
You know, the car plug-a-roony.
We'll show you our new car power adapter for your wireless phone with the three-stage charge indicator. So come in for easy answers to all your electronic accessory needs.
When it comes to plug-a-roonies, no place is more plugged in.
Radio Shack. You've got questions, we've got answers.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. To the vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Back to Don Rumsfeld yesterday before Congress. Here, Robert Byrd asked him a question. Notice the question, and then notice the fact that Rumsfeld does not
answer the question, although it puts him in such a tizzy that he starts stuttering, which I found very interesting.
Is $87 billion...
Oh, sorry about that. We got the wrong spot there. Here we go.
Where's the mandate for that? The American people have never been told that.
Well, the last thought I could suggest is this. The task we're engaged, bulk of the funds here are for the purpose of providing security and to enable the political
process
to move forward so that sovereignty can be transferred to the Iraqi people.
But where's the mandate? Okay, there's a reason why Rumsfeld couldn't answer that, and we'll get to that in just a minute. And then we got Pete Domenici. Here we have, I mean, you see, this is, it's almost startling to me how either naive some of these Democrats are or how willing they are to play the game. I honestly don't know which it is. But here's Domenici saying, why don't you guys just come up with a plan? Why don't you guys just offer us a plan? I mean, it would make such great PR and everything. And there is a reason why they can't offer a plan. We'll get into that in just a minute. But here's Domenici, the senator from New Mexico.
It would be a beautiful day if the three of you, two generals and you, stood up and said, well, we want the American people now to see the plan. It's in five parts, and here it is. And take 30 minutes and present it, and then answer questions.
And Rumsfeld says, well, you know, we're trying to tell the truth.
I have bent over backwards trying to be as forthright and candid and accurate and balanced.
Oops.
In how I characterize.
He's been watching too much Fox.
Place.
Thank you.
I guess time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. It's a strange one. And how badly will Bush's Iraq policy harm America's future? You have to understand why he's doing this. Why, you know, what is really going on here? And here is where we get to the crux of it. Senator Dianne Feinstein, out of all of the people who interrogated him, actually made the point, but then again, it didn't get pursued. Notice her very last sentence here.
It doesn't matter what we think. That's the impression that's given. And Peter's coming home to pay Paul now because you've come in for huge money without a way to pay for it in a war that many of us think was generated for the wrong reasons.
Generated for the wrong reasons. So what then might the reason be? Well, here's another little bit of fallout that has to do with the real reason. And it's not just oil. The real reason is actually much larger than just oil. But here's another little bit of fallout. Yesterday's New York Times, Vienna, September 24, OPEC, this is an article by Eric Fanner titled, Price of Oil Climbs as OPEC Plans to Cut Output. OPEC unexpectedly agreed today, this being yesterday, to cut oil production on November 1st. November 1st. Just as most of the developed world will be heading toward winter and demand for heating oil is likely to be rising. Analysts said the decision might have been influenced by other, more political factors. OPEC, see, get it. Get this now. OPEC is saying to the United States, they're trying to send us a message. And the reason has to do with an article that was in Al Jazeera yesterday, which I will share with you after the break coming up in just a second. But here's what Mehdi Varzi, a private energy consultant in London, said. This was a message to Washington. George Bush has got to be really nervous right now. His plans are backfiring. I'll review those plans right after this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. They be in big trouble. IBM faces lawsuits in California, Minnesota, and New York from former workers at microchip plants who allege the company knew it was exposing people to dangerous chemicals but did nothing to stop it. This week, lawyers for the California plaintiffs received what they call a corporate mortality file produced by IBM. The document tracks the deaths of some 30,000 microchip workers over the course of 30 years and suggests that IBM knew they were dying of cancer at higher rates than the general population. IBM won't comment on its content, but says the documents were supposed to remain confidential. A hearing on the California case takes place tomorrow.
When six unions representing Amtrak employees walk off the job next week, they won't be joined by the largest union of workers at the passenger rail company. The six unions, led by the Transport Workers Union, say the one-day strike is necessary to draw lawmakers' attention to Amtrak's funding woes. But while Amtrak's largest union, the Transportation Communications Union, calls the protest well-intentioned, it worries that a work stoppage will backfire and alienate swing voters. A total of 5,000 of Amtrak's 18,500 workers are scheduled to strike 1 week from tomorrow. Amtrak has asked the federal government for $1.8 billion next year. The Senate has earmarked nearly half a billion dollars less, while the White House has suggested cutting Amtrak's request in half.
12,000 loggers along the coast of British Columbia are waiting for the queue to walk off their jobs. The Industrial Wood and Allied Workers of Canada gave the BC logging industry a 72-hour strike notice on Monday. No formal strike date was announced, but it could begin as early as today. Loggers want to restart contract talks that broke down in August when industry representatives walked away from the bargaining table.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Cowboy gunslinger riding on the range. I'm white, educated, and I can't affect the change. Strange as it sounds to me. Power, sun, and I'm BFCC.
In the con, back in conservative, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back, friends. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. How badly will Bush's Iraq folly harm America's future? David Obey made an opening statement yesterday to the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Foreign Operations. He said, just a few excerpts here, he said, I think this could be, well, one of the most important hearings I have attended in my 34 years on this committee. This guy's no newcomer to this process. He said, for one thing, the amount of money that has been requested is so huge that it is nearly impossible to place in perspective. You know, $87 billion is more than $1,000 a year for every American working family. Think about it. And not only that, we're going to have to pay interest on it as well, because it's going to be borrowed money. Obey says, it is by far the largest supplemental request in history. That's as in the history of the United States, maybe the history of the world. He said it amounts to more than $1,000. It amounts to more than $1,000 for every working age family in America, and it is much larger than all but three of our regular appropriations bills. See, this is a supplemental appropriation. This is like, let's tack this thing onto the end. He says it's bigger than any but a three of all of the full appropriations. That's where they allocate all the money that they're going to spend. He says it is more money than the entire Defense Department budget during any year of the Vietnam War. And he adds that because we had allies who were part of the takeoff and helped pay the bills of the first Iraq War, it only cost us $8 billion. This My Way or the Highway operation has already cost us far more than $60 billion. And now we are being asked for $87 billion more. Going it alone is expensive. And then he points out the other prices that we're paying. Prior to the U.S. invasion, there were probably fewer terrorists plotting against the United States from Iraq than most other countries in the region, such as Iran, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Syria, Pakistan. That situation has changed dramatically. While Iraq is not currently a safe haven for anyone, it has certainly become a haven for precisely the individuals and organizations that do target our country. This being the flypaper scheme that Don Rumsfeld tried to float a few weeks ago in the press, suggesting that this is we've got these guys right where we want them. We put our soldiers in Iraq, and we say, bring them on, and all the terrorists in the world come to Iraq where we can kill them. We are the flypaper. This is essentially Rumsfeld's way of saying our men, our young men and women in uniform are going to be used as bait. And it also assumes that there's a fixed number of terrorists in the world, that events don't increase the number, which, of course, is not only a fallacy, but is stupid. The ugly truth, Obi says, is that this $87 billion, this requested $87 billion, is no more than a down payment. So what's going on here? We've got OPEC cutting the amount of oil that they're going to produce. It's a New York Times article yesterday. The White House wanted low oil prices to help spur the economy. You'll recall back in March, before we went into Iraq, Rupert Murdoch gave marching orders to George W. Bush. In an interview in England, he was quoted widely in all of the newspapers that he owns, like the Times of London, saying, if George Bush invades Iraq, takes their oil, I'm not quoting, this is, I've shared the quote with you several times, I don't have it right in front of me, this is a paraphrasing, but essentially this is what he said, that if George Bush invades Iraq and gets control of the oil and starts pumping it, and thus drives the price of oil down to $20 a barrel. See, OPEC wants to keep it up around 30, 27, 28, 29. If Bush can pump enough oil out of Iraq to get the price down to $20 a barrel on the worldwide oil markets, Rupert Murdoch, owner of Faux News, said that will help the American economy more than all of George Bush's tax cuts. His tax cuts are small potatoes. Cut the price of oil, and you'll see an economy rebound. And he was right to some extent. What's wrong with that, the problem with that, is that there is a cost in blood and in money to take Iraq, which Bush chose to pay, and we're now debating, finally. There is a cost in the increase of terrorism when a non-Arab, non-Muslim country invades an Arab-Muslim country, inflaming and infuriating the region. As Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt, said before we invaded Iraq, if the United States were to invade Iraq, it would create 100 Osama bin Ladens. You think one is bad? And finally, Murdoch's quote, as is so often the case of the super rich in America, which makes up largely this administration and its supporters, completely ignores the fact that the consumption of oil, that our addiction to oil, is one of the most powerful anti-democratic forces happening in America right now. Our addiction to oil has caused us to have to suck up to the Saudis to the point that for decades we have been ignoring their encouragement of Wahhabism, which is the fundamentalist Islamic sect. This is not Islam any more than when Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson say that the Twin Towers were knocked down because it was God's revenge against homosexuals, no more than are they representing Christianity. There are sects of Christianity that most Christians would look at and go, hey, no way. Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, every major religion has their fringe cases. And in Islam, it's Wahhabism. And the Wahhabis have taken over Saudi Arabia religiously. Turns out, interesting, I didn't know this before, I heard the CNN yesterday, that the process by which Islamic chaplains are vetted in the United States Army is controlled by the Wahhabists. It's sort of like saying all Christian chaplains within the United States Army have to be vetted by the Southern Baptist Convention. You know, putting one little sect in charge of an entire religion. Anyhow, but I digress. So we are paying this price, our oil addiction. We're paying all these multiple prices. And yes, over the short term, enough to get George Bush reelected in 2004, reducing oil prices would improve the economy, and he probably would get reelected. Rupert Murdoch was right in his logic. See, what's really going on here, the reason why Rumsfeld stutters when Robert Byrd says, where was the mandate for this? The reason why they can't lay this thing out, and the reason why people who consider themselves good people, and I have to tell you, I do not believe that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz and Pearl and all of these guys are evil people. In fact, I think the whole notion of evil people is bizarre. It's a way of diminishing somebody's humanity. It's a way of saying, well, they're less than human. It's how Hitler redefined the Jews so they're acceptable to exterminate them. Labeling someone as evil diminishes the humanity of all of us. Even if it's somebody, you know, even if it's some mass murderer. Yeah, he did evil things. We still have to recognize the humanity in all of us. I mean, we have to accept their behavior, by the way. So, anyhow, these guys, I think they thought that they were doing the right thing for America and the right thing for the world. And that right thing was, going back to George Bush Sr.'s comment, the American lifestyle is not negotiable. We want our SUVs. We want to have cars that average 20 to 30 miles per gallon in gasoline. We want to have big houses, McMansions, that are heated with oil and oil products. We want to have a large centralized energy producing system where 20-30% of our electricity just goes into space as losses over long transmission lines so that big corporations can control energy rather than allowing people to, you know, in most states it's illegal if you put solar collectors on your roof, and you can actually buy solar shingles now that would be useful, that would actually provide all the electricity necessary for the vast majority of homes south of the Mason-Dixon line in the United States. It's illegal in most states now because of legislation pushed through by the power companies for you to turn your electric meter backwards. That is, for you to feed power back into the grid, even though the technology exists and it's safe. But I think that they thought that if their elite group, see, they don't view it as corrupt. I do, but they don't, I'm sure. If their elite group, who knows better? This is the father knows better thing. This is the we know better how to run the country than you do. If their elite group of intellectual, powerful, you know, Dr. Condoleezza Rice with her PhD, Dr. Richard Pearl, if this elite, powerful, wealthy group could maintain absolute control, not just of the United States, but of the planet, then everything would be okay. Now, they have not gone anywhere near as far as Adolf Hitler did, and it would be a travesty to those who perished in the Holocaust to make a one-on-one comparison. But it is impossible not to point out the fact that this was also the logic of the Third Reich, that they were going to bring about 1,000 years of peace because they knew best. Whenever a nation rises up and says two things, the entire world is at risk. The first thing being, we have the answer. We know the way. We are the holders of the ultimate truth, number one. And number two, and we reserve the right to attack any country we want preemptively without being attacked first by that country for reasons that we decide are important. The world has known for some time, and Americans are just beginning to discover that Iraq was not attacked because of weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq was not attacked because of 9/11. That Iraq wasn't attacked just because there was oil there and it would make money for Cheney's buddies, for Halliburton and for Bechtel. Those are all nice side benefits. I'm sure that they sat around and said, hey, this will be great. I mean, isn't it wonderful if you can do good and be paid for it too? I mean, the head of the Red Cross makes a six-figure salary. Do you think that person thinks that's terrible? I think when Lip Dole was the head of the Red Cross, it hit its peak. I think it was $500,000 to $700,000. It was some incredible amount of money that Elizabeth Dole made when she was the head of the Red Cross. Since then, they've scaled it back. People thought it was unseemly. But the point is that most people would say, hey, if I can do good and I can make money, what's wrong with that? And for all but, you know, the renunciants among us, I think that there's a consensus that that's probably an okay thing. And so, you know, if we can secure the world, we can secure America, we can secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our descendants, as the preamble to the Constitution says. If we can do that, and some of our buddies get rich, hey, what's wrong with that? Well, what was wrong with it is that, number one, it's hubris. Number one, they thought they had the answer. Oil will last forever. Oil doesn't produce too much damage. There is no such thing as global warming. We can cover it up and keep it from people. It's bad science. I think that they're really believing their own PR. And if they're not, then we have a huge problem in America that really does require some serious investigations. And this is one of the reasons why I think we need investigations into this thing. So now we have, see, this, you go back to the Project for New American Century. Let's attack not just Iraq. Here's the article. Al Jazeera, you'll recall, was banned from Iraq yesterday by the Governing Council and by Mr. Bremer. This article, published by Al Jazeera on Monday, presidential hopeful General Wesley Clark says the White House devised a five-year plan after the 9/11 strikes to attack seven majority Muslim countries. A former commander of NATO's forces in Europe, Clark claims he met a senior military officer in Washington in November 2001 who told him the Bush administration was planning to attack Iraq first before taking action against Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Iran, Somalia, and Sudan. The article goes on to say Clark criticizes the plan to attack the seven states, saying it targeted the wrong countries, ignoring the real source of terrorists, and failed to achieve the greater force of international law that would bring wider global support. Who are the sources of terrorists, they ask? Clark says, according to this article in Al Jazeera, quote, the real source of terrorists, U.S. allies in the region like Egypt, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. And they go on to point out that Clark blames Egypt's repressive tactics, policies, Pakistan's corruption and poverty, as well as Saudi Arabia's radical ideology and direct funding of Wahhabism, for creating a pool of angry young men who become terrorists. So you've got all the countries in the region now reading this article in Al Jazeera and saying, well, this is no surprise. I mean, conspiracy, about 5 years ago or so, it was longer than that, because it was the week after the Gulf War I. It was the week that it had started. And a friend of mine, Scott Berg, and I had dinner in Vienna, Austria, at the home of the ambassador of Qatar, at the ambassadorial residence. And we were joined by the ambassadors from three other Gulf states. And listening to these guys, my friend Scott does business with them, listening to these guys talk about the conspiracy theories in the Middle East, you realize how incredibly Byzantine it all is. They are very, very concerned. And this thing with OPEC now is their way of saying to us, no, I'm sorry, you can't have it all. And now we've got to figure out what we're going to do. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Yes, yes, thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
We are going to do Rumsfeld now. You know, I talk about doing acid 30 years ago. Rumsfeld must do it daily. Right before he goes out for a press conference, Rummy comes out all acid-headed up and, you know, just stoned on his ass, just completely freaked out.
Oh, hi. I noticed the doorknobs are all crawling around the ceiling. Hello. Ask me nothing. Get these spiders off of me. Ah! People were waving things at me. There was stuff jumping out of doors. Ew, Jesus. You know, the fire hose on the wall there, it just rose up like a snake. And you're asking me questions like, I don't know this stuff.
This is the Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker. It's insane. Do you understand? These people are crazy.
Sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. No WMD in Iraq, source claims. This from the British Broadcasting Corporation today. The BBC says a Bush administration source who has spoken to the BBC said the draft report, this is David Kaye's report, he's in the, you'll recall David Kaye, the former weapons inspector and CIA operative, went to Iraq with 1,400 scientists and researchers, and has spent all these months and months and months, this is a big hope of the Bush administration, went to Iraq with all these people, spent all his time looking for weapons of mass destruction. The draft report, which is due to be published next month, concludes that it is highly unlikely that weapons of mass destruction were shipped out to countries like Syria. Why? Because they weren't there in the first place. That's the bottom line. I don't need to read you the whole article. You've been hearing about it on the news as well. So what we're seeing here is that all this boils, what all this boils down to, and it's so important to know this and understand it, because this is how we can do something about it. What all this boils down to is that energy meeting that Dick Cheney was having back before 9/11 with the oil companies, where he was planning the energy policy of the United States of America, and that became the foreign policy of the United States of America, which was more oil. It's like a bunch of heroin addicts sitting around saying, well, let's figure out our financial policies. What shall it be? Well, more drugs, more money for drugs, more drugs, yes. We are addicted to oil in the United States. Is anybody talking about doing anything for the addiction? No. Who did they bring into the meeting? The pushers. The key to Iraq is our energy policy in the United States. When Americans get it, that we are shedding the blood of our young men and women in around the world, in particular in Iraq, but in several other oil-rich places as well, that Osama bin Laden attacked us, he said, because we had our troops in Saudi Arabia to protect our oil supply. Infidels on holy ground. All he wanted was for us to leave our troops out of Saudi Arabia. So you get them out, I'll stop attacking you. When people get it, that this is what's going on, then maybe a change will come. And it's wonderful to hear Wesley Clark and Dean and Howard Dean and some of the other presidential candidates talking about this very issue. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con and conservative. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
From a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too? Heck.
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why not
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. A long-awaited report on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction lacks any evidence of a smoking gun. The CIA says the report from former UN weapons inspector David Kay won't have any firm conclusions on whether Saddam Hussein was hiding the banned weapons. During an appearance today on ABC's Good Morning America, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice says the findings in the report are not surprising.
This is a progress report by David Kay, and so it's not surprising that it's not going to come to any firm conclusions. He has miles of documentation still to go through. He has hundreds and maybe even thousands of people still to interview.
Rice is also playing down a new flap over comments that Secretary of State Colin Powell made in early 2001. At that time, Powell said Iraq had not developed any significant capability on weapons of mass destruction. A view of the nation's economy is seen in two economic reports released today. New orders for long-lasting manufactured goods fell last. First-time jobless claims dropped, with much of the decline being heaped on last week's Hurricane Isabel. Last night's debate of candidates for the California recall election was anything but stiff and formal. All five candidates mixed their messages with attacks on the other candidates. Independent candidate Arianna Huffington took issue with the Bush administration, saying the state's residents needed someone to fight in Washington for them. Arnold Schwarzenegger told her she was in the wrong state and needed to go to the East Coast for that battle. As he continued to speak over her, Huffington said, "I know this is the way you treat women, but not now." The debate's moderator called it a direct and personal attack and allowed Schwarzenegger to respond.
Hey, that I have just realized that I have a perfect part for you in Terminator 4. That's it.
I think at this point, this is not, ladies and gentlemen, this is not Comedy Central.
The exchange was one of several Schwarzenegger had with Huffington during the debate.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it, because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What should you do? See your doctor. Because a simple blood test can detect the problem. And with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Attorneys for the Chief Justice at the center of Alabama's Ten Commandments Monument debate will appear in court today. They're expected to ask for more time for the judicial ethics case against their client, Roy Moore. Last month, Moore refused a federal court order to remove a monument to the Ten Commandments from the Alabama Judicial Building. One of the students involved in the Glenbrook North High School powder puff football hazing incident last spring has been found guilty of three misdemeanor battery counts. The Chicago Sun-Times reports the 17-year-old was sentenced to 1 year of supervision and 50 hours of community service in addition to drug abuse evaluation.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Lawmakers have quickly criticized a federal court's ruling that blocked the national Do Not Call list. The judge in the case ruled the Federal Trade Commission doesn't have the authority to create and enforce the list. Representative John Dingell of Michigan said the judge made an error and Congress will work quickly to deal with the ruling by the time the list is supposed to take effect October 1st. Federal health officials are looking more closely at a pill that's been approved to combat narcolepsy. An FDA advisory panel will be reviewing the safety and effectiveness of Cephalon's Provigil for the treatment of excessive sleepiness. And after a three-year absence, Billy Crystal will return as the host of the Academy Awards. Crystal joked he's had a nice long sleep and is ready to return. This would make the comic's eighth return to the Oscars. The Oscars will be presented on February 28th. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Name some things that are different. Apples, oranges, men, women, football, soccer. How about tune-ups? If you think they're all the same, think again. And when I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Why does your tune-up cost $500, but your neighbor's only $100? Apples and oranges. Although symptoms in two vehicles are similar, actual problems can vary dramatically. Here's what I mean. Your neighbor's V8 engine is running on 7 cylinders due to a bad plug wire. Tune-up cost, $100. Your V8 engine's also running on 7 cylinders, but it's due to a burned valve. Tune-up cost, 5 times 100. My advice? Investigate the diagnosis before you relegate your wallet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the iAmerica Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and streaming live on the Internet on a number of different Internet radio stations, live365.com, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And you can find all of that from our homepage at liberaltalkradio.com. Arthur I. Blaustein is a professor of economic and social policy at the University of California in Berkeley. He was chair of the President's National Advisory Council on Economic Opportunity during the Carter administration. And his most recent books are Make a Difference, which is a remarkable collection it's called America's Guide to Volunteering and Community Service. And if you are interested in participating in this great nation and helping make a difference, this book, Make the Difference, is it. And his book, The American Promise, Justice and Opportunity. Dr. Blaustein, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Your book, The American Promise, Make a Difference, I think, is a marvelous book, and I want to be sure that everybody knows about it and knows that it's out there. I am, however, interested in going to some of the issues behind the issue, some of the things that I'm assuming you dealt with in more detail in The American Promise, which I don't have here, but I have some quotes from, and some of your comments about this, which gets to the issue of the difference between the conservative and liberal worldviews, particularly as to what the American promise is. For example, you pointed out at one point that those who attack, that the conservatives very often attack labor as unpatriotic, except for every 4 years, they suddenly change their tune just before Election Day and suddenly embrace labor. What's going on there with conservatives doing this?
Well, I don't understand how they get away with it. They're essentially, what they're doing is appealing to on election time, emotionality, and getting people to vote against their own economic and social interests. And the other 3.5 years before an election that what they're doing is undermining the quality of life and job development and health care and housing and all the things that American families have been fed pious rhetoric by the conservatives instead of policies that are geared to a healthy economy, secure jobs, decent health care, affordable housing, quality public education, renewable energy, and a sustainable environment. And these are the policies, once they're in power, that they totally undermine.
Why?
Well, I think it's for greed and selfish reasons, because they're in the public sector, and it seems to me that the purpose of conservatives for gaining power is one of two things. One is to transfer money from the public sector to the private sector so they can pay off their friends who are campaign contributors and who get the defense contracts, and to transfer money from domestic social programs to the defense and to put it in now, as we see in Iraq.
Yeah. Now, that's a pretty cynical view of the conservatives. I remember years ago watching William F. Buckley when he had a program called Firing Line, as I recall, and reading his writings and getting into some of the conservative thinkers of the day and thinking, you know, some of these people have principles and beliefs and ideals. I think that they are ideologues. I think that they're utopians, utopianists or whatever the word is. You know, they preface sentences with, if only everyone would, you know, the way that the communists in the United States did in the 1920s and 30s. Don't you think that there's an element in there of a certain noble mission, and perhaps a noblesse oblige, perhaps the idea that we are destined to be the ruling class, we will do the best for the country, just lay in charge, or you know, the Randian philosophies of if you just create essentially what you or I might call anarchy, but they call freedom, then everything will sort itself out?
Well, I think to some extent that's there, and I think that historically conservatives have played a role in terms of developing leadership and been concerned with freedom and liberty. And one looks back at Teddy Roosevelt. Lincoln was a conservative in many respects. He was conserving the Union. Teddy Roosevelt was concerned with the environment. Dwight Eisenhower was concerned about the issues after Brown versus the Board of Education of equal opportunity. But I think all that changed. It changed during the Nixon era and rapidly declined during the Reagan era. And now what we have is the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, I've heard it suggested that it was Pat Robertson's failed bid in 1980 for the presidency against Ronald Reagan that began the whole thing, because he had this huge base of donors and participants, and he basically decided that instead of trying to have the Republican Party embrace him, that he would infiltrate and take over the Republican Party, or at least with his values and his value system, and that was the beginning of the swing to the right. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. It began a little earlier. It began under Lyndon Johnson. When Johnson took office, when he was elected after the year and a half after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Johnson made a huge commitment to this country in terms of equal opportunity, equal justice, the war on poverty, the environment. He, in 1965, got something like 96 out of 100 major pieces of legislation through. But when he got the Civil Rights Act through and the Voting Rights Act too, as one reason his biography, he said that essentially, I'm probably going to lose the South to the Democrats for a generation. And Nixon understood that. And Nixon and John Mitchell developed the Southern strategy. Right. And it was, you know, just a rank effort to play on fears on racial issues and equal justice issues. And I think that was the beginning of it. And
so it comes back to racism in the United States.
Well, to a great extent. Well, it comes back to sheer power politics,
yeah,
and winning and getting control. And I think, you know, in the United States, we have two deep strains. One is populism, and the other is racism. And if they don't come into conflict, we're okay. But if they are brought into conflict, as Nixon did, as Reagan used it, as Papa Bush used it in the 88 campaign with the Willie Horton commercials, as George W. Bush used it in the South Carolina primaries against John McCain, it becomes a powerful force.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr. Arthur I. Blaustein. Am I pronouncing that?
Yes.
Yes. One of America's great thinkers, the author of Make a Difference, the author of The American Promise, Justice and Opportunity, and a professor of economic and social policy at the University of California in Berkeley. Dr. Blaustein, you said that the object of the Republican oratory these days is to persuade the American people that the Democrat Party was responsible for the 1929 crash and the Depression, and the Republican Party was responsible for all social progress under the New Deal. And I would add to that, to create an amnesia in America about the fact that the two great wars of the 20th century were fought by Democratic administrations, not Republicans, and to try and portray the Democrats as incompetent bumblers when it comes to the military. Why do you think that, number one, they're doing this, and number two, why is it getting traction?
Well, I think that the Republicans have used two trump cards. One is race, and the other is patriotism. George W. Bush didn't have much going for him when he got elected, if he got elected. And what happened, essentially, was that his numbers were very low, and the politics of it were not looking good. The country was in bad shape economically, and along came 9/11, and they thought that they finally had an issue that the Republicans can use to manipulate the American people, and it was patriotism. I mean, I find it absolutely shocking, for example, when John Kerry gave a speech a month ago in New Hampshire and questioned the policy in Iraq, and one of the White House press secretary said that he is undermining the U.S. position in Iraq. And then 2 weeks ago, Donald Rumsfeld said that anybody who criticizes the our Iraq policy is aiding, abetting the enemy. Now, this is the worst kind of manipulation of what patriotism is. And you find that on the Democratic side, for example, the two people who are most critical now, or the three people who are most critical, in particular, General Wesley Clark and John Kerry, were both distinguished veterans during the Vietnam War. And the people who were and their, you know, their patriotism essentially is being questioned. Certainly, it happened with Kerry, and Kerry is a person who, an individual, who not only fought in the war but was decorated, received three Purple Hearts, and two Silver Oakley cluster. And Bush, on the other hand, was what was commonly called then a chicken hawk. And so was Rumsfeld. And so was Cheney. These were people who all were big supporters of the war, but they didn't want to serve. And now they're questioning the patriotism of those who served most honorably in that war.
It's Orwellian. You know, it's really quite remarkable. Dr. Blaustein, we're speaking with Dr. Arthur Blaustein, who's the author of Make a Difference and the American Promise, Justice and Opportunity, and a professor of economic and social policy at the University of California, Berkeley, one of America's most insightful people in these areas of politics and social policy, economic and political and social policy. We have Jim in Pennsylvania on the line with a call for you, a question for you, Dr. Blaustein. If you can hang on, we'll be back right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Oh, joy! The sweet song of democracy will soon emanate from the closed boardrooms of corporate America for the first time. Or so the headlines led us to believe when the SEC recently proposed new rules to change the way that members of corporate boards are chosen. Change certainly is long overdue, for these private fiefdoms that rule our land are more secretive, autocratic, and ruthless than the mafia. Despite slogans like colder democracy, no democracy is tolerated within iron-fisted hierarchies. Yes, the boards of directors technically are elected by shareholders, but these elections are Kremlin-style, with shareholders getting only one slate of candidates hand-picked by the CEO. Even if a majority of shareholders vote against these chosen ones, the shareholders are simply ignored, and the incumbents stay on the board. In the wake of Enron and other corporate calamities, however, the public demanded reform, and now George W.'s SEC is responding with rules to allow shareholder opponents of imperious corporate management to put their own board candidates on the ballot and vote the incumbents out. Sounds good. Vote them out is the essence of democracy. But we've learned that a Bush reform almost always is an imposter wearing the mask of reform. The powerhouse CEOs who finance and essentially run the Bushites government are not about to let the SEC mess with their power, so they made sure that these so-called reforms are nothing but silky shams to protect the status quo. For example, only very large shareholders will be allowed to nominate an opposing candidate, and even then only rarely. Worse, the outsiders will be allowed to elect no more than one or two members of the board, even if more actually win. The controlling majority will still be hand-picked by the CEO. This is Jim Hightower saying, this isn't reform, much democracy, it's a fraud.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
but talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Dr. Arthur Blaustein, who is the professor of economic and social policy at the University of California and author of Make a Difference, his newest book, America's Guide to Volunteering and Community Service, and The American Promise, Justice and Opportunity. Dr. Blaustein, you talked about how the conservatives have imported the propaganda technique invented by dictators abroad. You said, remember a number of years ago there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in his book and was copied by aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood, always a big one, for its very fantastic nature would make it more credible if only you keep repeating it over and over again. Are you really suggesting that this administration is the first in America since World War II to use the big lie technique, and that they're really and truly intentionally doing it?
Well, at the risk of sounding perhaps cynical, I don't think so. I think I'm being a realist. Mm-hmm. I think that this administration doesn't get it. And they don't understand that a country cannot sustain itself, much less mature, on a fair of smooth one-liners, hothouse theories, rerun ideas, paranoia, questioning people's patriotism, and official policy pronouncements borrowed, as you said, from Orwell's 1984, yeah, where recession is recovery, war is peace, and a social policy based on aggressive hostility is compassionate. And they just keep repeating this. And, Tom, we were talking before, I think some insight into that narrow ideological attitude is best exemplified by a story about the Tom DeLay, who's probably the fourth or fifth most important, powerful political person in the country, being the majority leader in the House of Representatives.
And the former exterminator from Texas.
As I remember, during the 1988 campaign, when Dan Quayle was nominated as vice president, it came out that Dan Quayle also was a chicken hawk, and like George W. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, he avoided the draft, and he was practicing his golf swing in the Indiana National Guard at the country club. And when this came out, Tom DeLay was questioned by a reporter on the floor of the Republican convention, and Tom DeLay said, well, the problem there is Dan Quayle, like myself, didn't get into the regular army because all those slots were taken up by minority kids.
I mean, we're just like desperate to get into the army, right? Just desperate.
Like going to war and defending this country and risking your life is an affirmative action program, and they poor guys couldn't make it?
Well, you know, a lot of countries historically have dealt with the problem of poverty by generating wars and building armies. I mean, but DeLay's statement was, you know, obviously cynical nonsense. It's outrageous. Dr. Blaustein, we have Jim in Pennsylvania has a question for you. We have a break coming up in about 30 or 40 seconds. We'll get Jim's question, and then if you can hang on after the break, you can answer it. Is that possible?
Sure.
Okay, great. Jim in Pennsylvania, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, I have two things.
Okay.
One, I drive all over the country, and I see all kinds of people that are just barely making it. I mean, you can tell. And yet they have a Bush-Cheney sticker on their car, along with Jesus Saves and an NRA sticker. How have they successfully woven all of these people together to be in their base? And number two, and this may be sounding conspiracy theory, but...
Got about 5 seconds here, Jim.
Is the dumbing down of America a Republican plan to get votes? Thanks.
Oh, excellent questions. Jim, thank you for those questions. We'll get the answer from Dr. Arthur Blaustein right after this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
North America, encountered by Lewis and Clark 200 years ago, was a land of unimaginable abundance. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When Lewis and Clark set out on their westward expedition in 1804, one of the questions they sought to answer was, what kind of place was the Great Plains? Gary Moulton is the editor of the Lewis and Clark journals. He says people in the East had heard a variety of descriptions of the western grasslands.
Was it the Great American Desert, or was it the garden in the wilderness? And Lewis and Clark came back with a garden image of the Great Plains because of the abundance of wildlife.
Moulton says Lewis and Clark made note of the low rainfall, lack of trees, and short grasses, but they were stunned by the animals.
Often they talked about the great herds of buffalo and elk and deer. You know, buffalo that they would have to sort of knock out of the way to get by them.
They also describe a Missouri River teeming with mussels and fish.
They were amazed with the number of fish they were catching. Sometimes they'd put out a net and haul in 300, 800 fish at a time. So the abundance of the country was just something that really caught their attention.
Moulton says that abundance fell off as the expedition entered the Rocky Mountains, where game was scarce.
Our conception is always the plains as sort of boring, monotonous landscape, whereas the mountains are beautiful and scenic and prosperous. For Lewis and Clark, there was almost entirely the different attitude. The plains were the place of abundance.
That's historian Gary Moulton, editor of the Lewis and Clark journals. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but Swiss now says he came from Texas to Washington.
Here in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Dr. Arthur Blaustein, professor of economic and social policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and chair of the President's National Advisory Council of Economic Opportunity during the Carter administration. His most recent book, Make a Difference, America's Guide to Volunteering and Community Service. He's also the author of The American Promise, Justice and Opportunity, and numerous other writings here and there. There's a marvelous piece that he wrote called Leave No Millionaire Behind, for example, in Mother Jones, and I'd like to get into that in just a moment. But Dr. Blaustein, we had Jim in Pennsylvania asking these questions. How is it that that you see people. I see that I'm broadcasting from live from the People's Republic of Vermont here, and in the rural neighborhoods where people are you know struggling on $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a year, making their living sharpening other people's chainsaw blades and things. They've got Bush signs out in front of their house. Jim's question, how is that done, and is the dumbing down of America, or is there a dumbing down of America, or is it just that we're all working so hard we can't pay attention to what's going on, part of some Republican plot?
Well, before I speak to the plot part, let me say this, that Jim's absolutely right, and you're absolutely right, Tom. I was listening to NPR the other night, and a woman got on, and she said, well, I'm not that wild about Bush, but Bush is going to stop federal government from taking over my Medicare program.
Whoops!
Astounded. I mean, Bush wants to get his hands on our Medicare program and take it out of the government and turn it over to the private sector.
Right.
Jim's right. I mean, poverty, since Bush has been in, last year, we had an increase of 1.2 million poor people in America. We had 1.6 million Tutsis. Underemployment is up. Unemployment is up 50% since Bush, the increase in unemployment. He is absolutely damaging the middle class. His tax breaks. The average person who earns $1 million will get a tax break of $92,000 each year under the Bush plan, while the average American working family will receive $306. This is the height of fiscal policy, and it's absolutely punitive to the middle class. I do not understand it.
The cons, on the other hand, the conservatives say, well, of course the rich are getting their money back. They're the one who are paying the most taxes. How do you respond to that?
They're the ones that essentially you have the maldistribution of wealth curve, which is the worst it's been in the last 100 years in the United States. They're just not paying their fair share. And the maldistribution of wealth in the United States, we like to think that the English are a class system. The maldistribution of wealth in this country is worse than any other Western industrialized democracy, including England. But I did want to get on to this issue of the dumbing down of America, because that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book Make a Difference, America's Guide to Community Service. And it has to do with the fact that for the past 30 years in this country, we have had reports like the Markle Foundation report that said that voting is in a decline. The research that was done at Harvard by Robert Putnam and the book Bowling Alone that said Americans were not participating in their community. And the Pew Center for Public Policy and the media saying that Americans know less about public policy now, and particularly young people, than any time in the 30 years or 40 years that they've been doing this study. Mm-hmm. And that indicates to me that there is a dumbing down. And I believe that the threat is, and why I did the book, that's a terrible threat to democracy. Because the lifeblood of a democracy is an informed constituency, civic responsibility, community participation, and citizen involvement.
Yes.
And that is what has to be strengthened in this country. As I said, that's why I did the book. But I want to talk about the role of the mass media for a second. The mass media, particularly television and radio, get at the question of dumbing down. Up until 30 years ago, three-quarters of the American public got their information from reading. Now, three-quarters of the American public get their information from the evening news. The evening news is serious about unserious issues and unserious about serious issues. With the exception of maybe NPR, shows like the Tom Hartman Show, and
Bless you.
Decent... What?
Bless you. Thank you.
And decent newspapers, people are getting misinformation and disinformation. Last night, I listened to, we're having, you know, the recall in California, and I listened to the debate and then happened to be riding home and listened to one of the right-wing conservatives like Rush Limbaugh out here on the West Coast. And he called, like, immediately he got on. It was just rant radio. It was like a drive-by shooting. He called the three leading contenders Trotskyites, communists, and socialists. It was nasty, mean-spirited, aggressive, hostile toward government and democracy. It's small wonder that we have this dumbing down. Jefferson once wrote, "We can be free or ignorant, not both."
Yeah, and it's absolutely, and he also made a comment to the effect of that democracy requires an informed citizenry.
Absolutely.
I don't recall the exact quote.
One of the reasons that I did those articles for Mother, that were syndicated for Mother Jones, is I have been covering politics, writing about it for 40 years, and I can say without equivocation, I wrote the first book about the Nixon administration, and I wrote the first book about the Reagan administration. And I can say absolutely and flatly that no administration has done more to damage economic, social, and environmental justice in the United States than the Bush administration has done, and has done it so quickly.
Yeah. One of the things that I try to do with this program, we call it helping you win the water cooler wars. That is giving people information that when the conservatives parrot the, you know, conservatives at work and their family, standing in line at the supermarket, when people start parroting these lines from the right wing, from the right wing talk radio and whatnot, that there's a response that makes sense. And first of all, tell me if this is accurate, that your response to my question about the conservatives saying the rich pay most of the taxes, therefore they should get most of the tax breaks, and you talked about maldistribution of wealth, and I don't think that the person standing behind me in the supermarket line who's browsing the Daily World News might get that. But isn't that really the same way of saying they are getting the greatest blessings of liberty and democracy? They are getting the greatest benefits out of the infrastructure that we all create of roads and schools and power systems and water and police and fire. And therefore, they have the greatest responsibility to pay back into that. Is that a good...
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that was what the social contract was about.
Right.
America supposedly learned its lesson during the Great Depression in the 30s. And essentially, just what you're saying was the response. The social contract, people paying their fair share, building the middle class, passing the kinds of laws that were necessary to assure the country did not go through that national tragedy again, and that all Americans enjoyed the benefits and each paid their fair share.
And we had then a president who was saying these kind of things, and the only national radio talk show host, Father Coughlin, at least for a few years, was going along with it. Then he got a little crazy and started taking on FDR and ranting, and they finally pulled him off the air, and apparently he dissolved into Alzheimer's obscurity. But there was that discussion in the public arena, and it was being led by the President of the United States, and we have the exact opposite situation now. We have more people declaring bankruptcy right now numerically than during the Great Depression, over 400,000 in the last quarter. We have more people living below the poverty line than during the Great Depression. Numerically, we have, I believe, more people unemployed. It may be close. It's not, certainly as a percentage, it's not. Back then it was, what, 30-some-odd percent for unemployed? 32%, as I recall. But when you look at the raw numbers, I mean, there weren't as many people in America. But we have a real tragedy, a real disaster here, a human disaster, and they are not talking about this. Which brings me to my last question for you, the one that on the top of my list here anyway, was in this Mother Jones article, you said, given growth in the private economy has had a declining role in reducing poverty, Now, of course, the conservative answer to poverty is get the government out of it and empower corporations to create jobs, to hire people so that, you know, there's no more poverty. But you say, and virtually all of the reduction in poverty since the mid-1960s has been brought about by the expansion of national social insurance and income transfer programs. This is the huge bugaboo for people on the right. I had a conservative on here yesterday for an hour that we were debating, and he kept saying, well, you know, it's just wrong to transfer money from people who are earning it to people who aren't. And I said, why? You know, and we just kept going back. What are your thoughts on this? What is the... I'll just tell you very quickly, my take on it is that we do this because we want to live in a society that's safe and rational and reasonable, and we don't want to walk out the front door of our house and have 30 starving children with their hands out, as happens in Bombay, and therefore this social contract. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. I'm sure they're more well-developed than mine.
Well, no, I think you're right, Tom. I think that it has to do with what kind of a society we want to live in. Unfortunately, in civics classes in high school and many university classes nowadays, they don't have people discussing and learning about issues like civics. And, you know, the issue, the question that you pose is one that every American should be concerned with, and that is, what kind of society do I want to live in, and what kind of human being do I want to be? Do you want to be in a society where infant mortality is off the wall, where there's a tremendous amount of poverty, where there are starving children, where there's malnutrition? I don't think most Americans want that. So there has to be a balance between the private sector and the public sector.
So
we learned during the Hoover administration and the Coolidge administration, as well as during the Reagan administration, that trickle-down economics does not work, that the government has an important and critical and vital role to play. That's what democracy is about. And during the Coolidge and Hoover administration, we had the Great Depression, and during the Reagan administration, we had a brutal recession. And that's where George W. Bush is headed now, with that rhetoric of that you just talked about, and this guy who was on your show, a woman yesterday, talks about. That's all theory. It's rhetoric. It's like I said about George Bush's tax plan. It's like snake oil. It sells, but it doesn't cure.
Well, which raises two questions in the 3 minutes we have left here. Number one, how do you respond then to conservatives who say, well, if you just put people on the dole, if you just hand money out to people, you provide them with no incentive to work, and therefore welfare will just eventually balloon out of control to the point where nobody's working and you got a few people paying, you know, the Ayn Rand scenario from Atlas Shrugged. And also the corollary question of that, if you can quickly give some thought to this or some response to this, is at this point in George W. Bush's presidency, he's at about 50% approval rating. At this point in Ronald Reagan's first term, he was at 40% approval rating. How did Reagan pull out of that, and what do you think is Bush going to do to pull out of this? And you pick the questions if either one of them are too large for 2.5 minutes.
Well, let me start with the first question because I think it's important, and that is, no, I don't think the role of government should be to put people on the dole. The public infrastructure in this country is suffering tremendously. Whether it's the roads, sewage system, we had that, in the Northeast, you had that grid failure. You have a number of environmental shortcomings all over the country. You have roads that need upkeep, you have railroads, parks.
So you're suggesting the government should become the employer of last resort?
You need school construction. You need, but it's a combination of private-public. You need housing. Tom, the United States now has probably the worst from the worst daycare problem of any Western industrial democracy, and because of low wages, poor facilities, lousy food, The same thing is true in our nursing homes for the seniors and the elderly. I mean, what kind of country treats its children and its elderly the way we do?
Yeah. It's a disgrace.
I mean, it's a national disgrace. The same with
and
mental
an embarrassment.
Health.
I mean, around the world they point to us. I do a lot of international traveling, and I have lived overseas, and Americans have no idea how they are viewed by the rest of the world.
Yeah, there's a... I also wanted to say something about what the cost of the war in Iraq.
Dr. Blaustein, if I may interrupt you, if you can hold on, we've got a five-minute break here, and then we'll have about 3 minutes to wrap up the show. Can you stick around for that?
I would love to, and I'd like to talk briefly about Iraq.
Great. I'll give you the last 3 minutes of the program for your final word. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live. But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work, to a mall, to the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. That was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy
Scott Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Dr. Arthur Blaustein, professor of economic and social policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and noted author of numerous books and articles, including Make a Difference and The American Promise. Dr. Blaustein, you were answering a couple of questions there we had about welfare moms and the 40% of Reagan, and also you wanted to talk about Iraq. We've got about 3 minutes. I'll leave it to you.
Okay. I briefly want to say something about Iraq and also about, Tom, your larger question that you raised of the role of democracy. And with regard to Iraq, the American people and young Americans who are serving the armed forces there are paying a very, very stiff price for George Bush's narrow ideology, for his lack of understanding of diplomacy, for his lack of sense of history, and for his inability to understand what the genuine role of the United Nations is. I heard very little in the discussion. Both when Blair and when Tony Blair and Bush talked about when they met, talking about the coalition and said how much they appreciated and understood Churchill and Roosevelt, and they gave each other presents having to do with, that related to both Roosevelt and Churchill. What they did not seem to understand is Roosevelt and Churchill both wrote about the United Nations, and Roosevelt said that the United Nations is the place to go not to end wars, but to end the beginnings of wars.
Mm.
And when Bush poo-pooed the UN, said it this, you know, it's it can't get its act together. Churchill wrote that the United Nations is an imperfect institution, which is a reflection of the imperfect world we live in. And its purpose is not to lead us into an ascent into heaven, but to prevent us from going into a descent into hell.
Well said. Dr. Arthur Blaustein, author of Make a Difference and The American Promise. Dr. Blaustein, thank you very much for being on our program today. That music means we've come to the end of the line here. I hope you can join us again one of these days.
Well, thank you, Tom. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con and conservative. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My
Hi, fellow Americans. This is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. When 50 million Americans speak, Congress listens. Moving with unusual speed, the House today passed a bill to repair the flap over the national Do Not Call list. A federal judge ruled yesterday that the Federal Trade Commission does not have the authority to create and enforce the list. Russian President Vladimir Putin today praised the United Nations as a solid, long-term foundation and a structure of universal importance. Through an interpreter, Putin called the UN irreplaceable, even if its member nations sometimes have sharp differences.
The fact that the inciters of terror are easily recognizable, both in the August events of this year and in terrorist acts of previous years, that only attests to the global nature of this threat. Now, when we understand that the United Nations must become the basis for the anti-terrorist coalition.
Beginning with the terrorist attacks in the U.S. on 9/11, Putin stressed this style is identical everywhere and attests to the global nature of this threat. In the West Bank and Gaza Strip, Israeli soldiers have clashed with Palestinian militants. The Israeli army says 4 Islamic militants were killed. Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat condemned the attacks.
This escalation is part of Israel's government policies to undermine the peace process, destroy the roadmap, undermine President Bush's vision of two-state solution along with the walls and settlements, and resume full occupation.
Erekat also called for action from the U.S., Russia, the European Union, and the United Nations. Last night's California gubernatorial debate in Sacramento was anything but stiff and formal. Sacramento State Professor Nicholas Burnett evaluated Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger's performance.
Arnold's comments tend to be long on glib phrases and kind of pithy sayings, but relatively short on the specifics about how he's going to close the budget, how he's going to solve workman's comp, how he's going to ultimately bring things back into line and make it better for business.
The recall election takes place on October 7th. More in a moment.
They left their farms and factories, their offices and classrooms. 16 million Americans in uniform. 400,000 gave their lives for freedom. For the first time, young women eagerly entered the workforce to supply the arsenal the world depended on for victory. But this was no faceless mass that went to war. They were my relatives and yours, our fathers and mothers, our grandparents and next-door neighbors. They were our family's heroes. And yet, unbelievably, there's no national monument anywhere to honor the amazing generation that won World War II. I'm Tom Hanks. Please help build the National World War II Memorial on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Call 1-800-639-4WW2. That's 1-800-639-4992. It's time to say thank you.
A public service message from the American Battle Monuments Commission, the Ad Council, and this station.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice apparently isn't surprised by the lack of results in the first report on the U.S. hunt for WMDs in Iraq. On ABC's Good Morning America, Rice noted that it's early and former U.N. Weapons Inspector David Kaye still has miles of documentation to go through, as well as hundreds of interviews to conduct. All 10 Democratic presidential candidates will be in New York City today for a debate on economic policy. That includes former NATO commander, retired four-star Army General Wesley Clark. The debate comes as President Bush's approval ratings have slipped to an all-time low. More after this.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Chinese researchers are sounding a warning about the popular herbal remedy ginseng. They report in the journal Human Reproduction that rats exposed to the supplement in the womb had more abnormalities than those not exposed to ginseng. A favorite of Kansas City Zoo patrons for nearly 50 years has died. Officials at the zoo say zookeepers found Casey the elephant dead early yesterday morning. The African elephant came to the Kansas City Zoo in 1955 when he was 4 years old. Casey was one of the biggest bull elephants ever held in captivity. The director of animal health at the zoo, Dr. Kurt Swademeyer, says Casey's long life is evidence of the quality of care he received.
To have him live to the age that he did, he's the oldest bull elephant in captivity here in at least North America and possibly the world, tells everybody how good a job staff did in caring for him.
Zoo officials think age was a factor in Casey's death. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. Chris Milligan was a friend of the late Skull and Bones investigator Anthony T. Sutton and is the editor of the new book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. It's Thursday afternoon. It's our third hour. We're going to do our segment where we bring you things that you probably didn't know that you didn't know. The things that, you know, could it be? Is it really possible? It's
you
our...
know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be everything you know is wrong? Is it possible that the Skull and Bones Society is more than just a fraternity at Yale? Let's get into this. Chris Milligan, Milligan, is it right? Is that right, Chris?
Yes, Milligan, yes.
Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Glad to have you here.
Oh, my pleasure, sir.
Tell us, how and when did Skull and Bones get started?
Skull and Bones was formed in 1832 at Yale University by William Huntington Russell and Alfonso Taft. William Huntington Russell had just came back from spending about 3-4 months in Germany
now
studying at the University of Berlin.
Wasn't William Huntington Russell somehow affiliated with Russell and Company, which was the world's largest opium smuggling operation in the 19th century?
Well, It was the largest American operation. The largest operation was Jardine and Matheson from Scotland. And yes, he was. Some books say half brother. Other books say cousin. And if you look at the genealogical record, he was a cousin.
That was Samuel Russell.
Samuel Russell, yes. And the Russells were very much involved with Yale University ever since its beginning also.
Yeah, and in the Yale University was renamed the Yale University because of Thomas and Elihu. I'm not sure how to pronounce
it. Elihu. Yale,
yeah.
I believe, yes. He was a nabob in India and worked for the British East India Company. And
he had a fortune for them.
Yes, at Fort George in Madras. And he got a little bit of trouble there and came back to England. He was from Wales, lived in London then, and became known as quite a philanthropist. And he sent some books and some money to a college in Connecticut, and then they decided to name the college Yale University. And
going
back to Russell and Company, a lot of the people and the families that were later involved with Skull and Bones, their family members worked with Russell and Company, including even the Roosevelts.
Interesting. And, okay, so that's General William Huntington Russell in 1832 was the co-founder of Skull and Bones. The other was Alfonso Taft. He's the grandfather of our ex-president Howard Taft, isn't he?
Yes, and he was Secretary of War and Attorney General and an ambassador to Austria and an ambassador to Russia, minister to Russia, and many
Alfonso
other things
also. Alfonso was.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And do you think that the Skull and Bones Society, when it was first started, I know secret societies were a big thing back then. I spent some time, some rather extensive amount of time, actually, in Germany doing research on the Thule Society, which was the secret society that Hitler was initiated into and that many suggest was behind the religion of the Nazis. And I'm wondering, and some people talk about the Illuminati in Europe and the Thule Society, really, when you get into what they did, it's much more concrete and real and very much there and still alive. And there was a group at Oxford, the name of which escapes me. Did Skull and Bones, pardon?
All Souls Group?
Yeah. And did Skull and Bones have their origin as a secret society kind of society like Thule and Illuminati and All Souls? Or was it more, you know, hey, let's get together, drink a few beers, and give it a fancy name so people will think we're up to something?
Well, no. In the 1820s, especially after Captain Morgan disappeared in 1825-26, there was a large anti-Masonic movement that started its own political party. Was the first political party to have national conventions and whatnot. And at that time, the large secret society was Phi Beta Kappa. Phi Beta Kappa was a secret society at that time, and it had started in William and Mary in 1776. And in the 1820s there, with the anti-Masonic hysteria, Phi Beta Kappa became an open honorary organization. And once it became open and honorary, it became open and honorary in 32, and so that's when they started Skull and Bones as a secret society.
Right.
And when
and
they
in many cases
started it, it was called S-C-U-L-L, which is a long boat, which is very similar to some of the meanings behind Phi Beta Kappa.
Oh, interesting. And lest our listeners not remember, the Masons, the Masonic Society, was heavily involved in the creation of the United States of America. Most of the founders, most of the signers of the Declaration and of the Constitution were Masons. The inaugural parade for George Washington was a Masonic parade where all the people marching in the parade carried the banners of the various Masonic societies. And there were many people, there was pervasive paranoia of Catholics, of Jews, of Masons, of anybody that was perceived as the other or as a kind of a tribal element within America. And the Masons became, you know, the Catholics and Jews for hundreds of years in America were kicked around, as were other minorities, not religious minorities, but ethnic minorities and racial minorities. But the Masons in particular were seen as, because it was a voluntary thing, as perhaps at this after the early 1800s, or as the founders were all dying off, you know, Jefferson died in 1824, as I recall, or thereabouts, and anyhow, as the founders were dying off, all these old Masons, there was this backlash against them, and at times it took on tones of hysteria. Is my recollection of history accurate or consistent with yours?
Well, yes, and well, there'd been a big anti-Illuminati hysteria also in the late 1700s, and then you see you also had a big a whole bunch of religious revivals, and then you also had the Revolutionary War, you know, sandwiched in between that, and so you had a very interesting mix, and you had Phi Beta Kappa was very, very large secret society and was also very mystically based. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing, I don't see anything really wrong with, you know, with mysticism and with fellowship. It's just that when these secret societies start to, you know, really affect our republic is when we should really, really, really take notice. And secrecy just really isn't what our republic is about.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, explicitly. I mean, the whole idea of a democracy in a constitutionally limited republic is about transparency. We're talking with Chris Milligan, who is the author of Skull and Bones, or Flesh Out Skull and Bones. Excuse me, the new book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. And Chris, how deep are the Bush administration's ties? Oh, and by the way, I want to let our listeners know, if you'd like to be on the program today, if you have a question for Chris, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Chris, how deep are the Bush administration's ties or roots into Skull and Bones?
Of course you have the president. You have the Cheney family. There are eight Cheney members in Skull and Bones. Dick Cheney is not a member. He did go to Yale. But he had a girlfriend back in Wyoming, and he went back to Wyoming. Both Dick Cheney's grandfather and President Bush's grandfather were employed by Averell Harriman, who was a major member of Skull and Bones. You have one of the attorneys for the Homeland Security is a member of Skull and Bones, the main attorney there. The gentleman who's head of SEC right now is a member of Skull and Bones. And then also there is a big problem in that there is a big hole in the public's understanding of who is a member of Skull and Bones. For a while, when their power was very unassailable and was quite out front, they announced every year in the Yale Banner who were the new members of Skull and Bones. But that stopped in 1969, and if you go to the library at Yale, Sterling Library, you can get old membership books, a lot of them from the 1800s, but the most recent one is from 1971 for living members and 1973 for deceased members. And then privately available, there is a volume from 1985. That has circulated among researchers, but there is, we have no knowledge of from 1986 to 1998 who the members even are, except
they've really
for
gone underground.
That we have been able to find in when they on their board of directors,
right.
And so there are, which is the only thing that they have to publicly declare in the state of Connecticut.
Remarkable.
And so
Chris,
there's a lot of 30 and almost 40-year-olds that we have no idea of who they are. So,
yeah, we're speaking with Chris Milligan, who is the author of Friend of the Skull and Bones Investigator Anthony C. Sutton and editor of the new book Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And we have Brian in Jersey. Is that in New Jersey, Brian, with a question for Chris?
That's New Jersey.
That's New Jersey. Brian, what's your question? Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. I actually live right near Philadelphia, and if you go to Independence Hall, you can walk a block away and see made out of the same brick, the first Masonic temple, I'm guessing that was, you know, in the United States. If it was a part of our government all the way back then when they first built Independence Hall, how can you, or do you think it's separated today? Do you think they're still connected today?
You talking about the Masons?
Yes.
Okay. Chris, your thoughts on that?
Well, you have...
We've got about 30 seconds right now, Chris, and then
J. Edgar Hoover had his own little Masonic temple right in the Masons. If you walk around D.C., I mean, D.C. is definitely laid out architecturally as a Mason would. And, you know, like I say, whether all this is good or bad is not for me to say. It shouldn't be secret, and everything should be talked about. And I think, yes, there's still... ties with Masonic organizations with Washington, D.C. and the federal government today, absolutely.
Okay, great. We have Jack in San Francisco with a question for you. We'll pick up right after the break here, Chris. And also,
okay.
I'm curious about what members we have who are presidential candidates. You can stick around, Chris?
Oh, yes.
Okay, hang on for just a minute. We got a break here, and we'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven to and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days. Roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
All the world over sun, easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Let them be, listen, that's the way it should be. Peace and the valley, people got to be free.
Welcome to the radio support group of, by, and for the people. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking with Chris Milligan, who is the editor of the new book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. It's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, Thursday afternoon. Those of you who are conspiracy-inclined, do not, on the Internet, go to KnightsTemplar.com. And one of the folks, Chris, in our chat room has a question for you. Shep GC2003 says, well known these guys are all in cahoots anyhow with the oil pushing and addiction. Does the Skull and Bones connection add any useful information? And then after that, we've got several callers on the line here for you.
Okay,
your thoughts, Chris?
Interesting you mentioned oil. Well, you see, a very interesting group of bonesmen, the class of 1837, and there's a guy in there that you'd like to know about too. But first, there's Professor Benjamin Silliman Jr. And he discovered in 1855 the process known as cracking. Okay, that, in other words, the distillation of paraffin and gasoline from oil. Okay,
right.
That's a guy who discovered how to do it, was a member of Skull and Bones. Okay, and in his report he wrote, gentlemen, it appears to me that your company may have in their possession a raw material from which, by a simple and not expensive process, they may manufacture very valuable products. Okay, and this was the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company of New York, which was the first company to take oil and try and do something other than use it for medicinally and whatnot. And so they sent this sample around. And it was Bissell, Mr. Bissell of New York, who owned the company, and went to Mr. Townsend for some financing, and they took and Silliman wrote this report, and soon after he wrote that report, the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company of New York passed into the hands of investors from New Haven, Connecticut. And the Townsend and Bissell family soon had sons in the order of Skull and Bones. And then these people were responsible for the first oil well. Drake, who did the oil
well. Drake, 1868.
In Pennsylvania, was
right, in Titusville.
A conductor on the New York and New Haven Railroad. And he used to stay at the Tontine Hotel there in New Haven. And he was out of work, and these guys sent him over to Pennsylvania to do that first oil well. So these guys have been involved with oil ever since it began. And it even stretches as far as Cleveland, where, you know, Rockefeller came from, and then a lot of his early partners, their kids went to Yale and whatnot. Cleveland used to be owned by Connecticut. I mean, it's a long story, but in some of the same families that are in Skull and Bones bought up a whole bunch of Ohio because it was, it has to do with the lines going out from Connecticut and a whole bunch of things, but they owned it at one time.
So there is a tie-in there.
Oh, Jack, absolutely. For years, Skull and Bones members have been involved with oil, including, you know, Bush family and before them and after them.
Fascinating. We're talking with Chris Milligan, who's the editor of Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. Jack in San Francisco. We've got about 30 seconds before a break. If it's a quick question, go for it, Jack. If not, you can get started, and we'll hold you on over the break, and you can ask Chris the rest of it at the end. Go ahead.
Hi, Tom and Chris. Great stuff, Chris. My question is simply this. I just wanted to make sure you guys knew about John Kerry also being a member of the Skull and Bones. I'm sure Chris knows, and I wanted to make sure everybody else knew. It's listed in the Boston Herald as well as the Boston Globe.
Get this. John Hines was also a member of Skull and Bones. He was the CEO and the main stockholder of Hines, you know, Foods.
Right.
He died, and
the ex-husband of, of
and John Kerry married his widow, kept it all in the family.
Fascinating stuff. We're talking with Chris Milligan, editor of Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for that call, Jack. Stay tuned. Bill in Chicago will take your call right after this break. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. Big Blue may be in big trouble. IBM faces lawsuits in California, Minnesota, and New York from former worker microchip plants who allege the company knew it was exposing people to dangerous chemicals but did nothing to stop it. This week, lawyers for California plaintiffs received what they call a corporate mortality file produced by IBM. The document tracks the deaths of some 30,000 microchip workers over the course of 30 years and suggests that IBM knew they were dying of cancer at higher rates than the general population. IBM won't comment on its content but says the documents were supposed to remain confidential. A hearing on the California case takes place tomorrow.
When six unions representing Amtrak employees walk off the job next week, they won't be joined by the largest union of workers at the passenger rail company. The six unions, led by the Transport Workers Union, say the one-day strike is necessary to draw lawmakers' attention to Amtrak's funding woes. But while Amtrak's largest union, the Transportation Communications Union, calls the protest well-intentioned, it worries that a work stoppage will backfire and alienate swing voters. A total of 5,000 of Amtrak's 18,500 workers are scheduled to strike 1 week from tomorrow. Amtrak has asked the federal government for $1.8 billion next year. The Senate has earmarked nearly $500 million less, while the White House has suggested cutting Amtrak's request in half.
12,000 loggers along the coast of British Columbia are waiting for the queue to walk off their jobs. The Industrial Wood and Allied Workers of Canada gave the BC logging industry a 72-hour strike notice on Monday. No formal strike date was announced, but it could begin as early as today. Loggers want to restart contract talks that broke down in August when industry representatives walked away from the bargaining table.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit radio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap of help and humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, tofu, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth and common sense. sense in broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting to you live from the People's Republic of Vermont. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Speaking of conspiracies, we have Chris Milligan on the line, who is the friend of the late Skull and Bones investigator Anthony C. Sutton, and is the editor of the new book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. And just to wrap this up, Chris, Bill, who was on the line here, has dropped off. So I'm wondering, what is the initiation ceremony like for a Skull and Bones member? How do people get into Skull and Bones? How are they inducted, and what happens?
Well, there are they choose 15 each year, and you are the outgoing class. The seniors choose the juniors. And what their initiation ceremony is, I don't know for sure. They are a secret society. Mr. Ron Rosenbaum was able to view a ceremony, and it has been reported in one book that they just put it on as a show for them. But if you go back and look, some of the things that that he saw are talked about beforehand, in some snippets that we have now and then from people reporting about parts of the ceremony. I mean, there's all kinds of rumors of anywhere from wrestling naked in mud to lying in coffins to telling about your sex life to all kinds of things. But an interesting thing that I thought that Mr. Rosenbaum reported was this chant that the order used in their initiation rites, and that was that this chant was the hangman equals death, the devil equals death, and death equals death. And you know,
which means what?
Well, you know, they have this thing on their wall that they has a picture in it, and it's very similar to part of the initiation ceremony that is recorded for the Illuminati for their Prince Regent's degree. But they have these pictures of skeletons, and there's like a crown and a jester's fool and like a military thing. But when they're dead, you can't tell who they are, and so everybody's equal in death. And what it all means, who's to say? They, like I say, they're a secret society. Looking at it in one sense, you could say that they believe in a low-level form of sorcery, of necromancy, which is they believe in the power of death. And they, by creating death, they get more power and then get to where they're trying to go. And
aren't there others, Chris, who suggest that this is really just
death?
Aren't there others, Chris, who suggest that this is really just the old boy society, that this is just another old boy network?
No, this is a multi-generational cult.
Hmm.
Okay. They're almost all related to the Cabot family. The military-industrial complex happened in Connecticut in the 1800s. Connecticut for a long time was known as the arsenal of democracy. I mean, these guys have been around since 1832. One of their first things to do was take over our education system. Okay, and, you know, I mentioned the class of 1837, Bonesman, which Professor Silliman was a member. Also a member of that class was a Morris R. Waite. And with
Morris R. Waite, he was the Chief Supreme Court in 1886.
Right, and with two sentences, one very long and one very short, you know, he says this court does not wish to hear arguments on the question whether the provision in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which forbids the state to deny any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of law, applies to these corporations. We are all of opinion that it does. And you know the ramifications of those two simple sentences.
Well, yeah, although they were taken dramatically out of context by Davis, by J.C. Bancroft Davis, yeah, because really what he was saying was, we all agree that corporations are artificial persons. They have personhood status to stand before the court. It doesn't mean that they should have the rights of humans. And in fact, that was published after Waite was dead. But in any case, you it's interesting. I didn't realize Waite was a Skull and Bones guy, and I had read most of his biography. You suggest in your book that the Skull and Bones had their hands in the Chinese opium trade, the Bolshevik Revolution, the Nazis, the Chinese Revolution, the Vietnam War, the War on Drugs. Our final question here for the what? How so? You know, is this something that we really should be concerned about, or is this just a bunch of eccentric crank rich kids at Yale?
No, I think we should be very deeply concerned for our children and for our republic. How I came across this was from my father. My father was OSS, G2, and CIA. He was a branch chief head of all of East Asia for the intelligence services. And he told me that the Vietnam War was about drugs. There was these secret societies behind it. And then he said communism was a sham. These same secret societies were behind it all. And I didn't understand what he was saying. And, I was a teenager, and I was smarter than my dad anyway, And it didn't compute. But in doing some research, I was just looking into the CIA drugs question, and then as a person that was alive during the Kennedy assassination, you read about that and whatnot, and just was doing stuff about that, and I came across again the people that were talking about secret societies.
And you think this is tied up in the war on terrorism as well?
Most assuredly. I mean, you look at George Bush when he was vice president underneath Reagan. He was head of two very large working groups. One was on terrorism and the other one was on drugs. And these people have, these secret societies have shown to use terrorism acts to move events along to get what they want.
Do you think Skull and Bones had anything to do with 9/11 or with terrorist acts in the United States?
Well, it's a very interesting act in that a lot of their acts are done in a ritualistic way, in a ritualistic manner, to imply mass trauma upon the population, because it's something that they found from mind control. You do mass trauma against a individual, and it creates a multiple personality disorder. Well, it'll do the same thing within a cohesive group such as a country, which is a one unital value similar to a person.
Amazing. I think we're pushing the edges here, Chris. Pushing the edges of what might be credible. Bill in Chicago is back on the line. I got Kenny in Alabama and Dean in Santa Fe with questions for you. Let's take Bill's question first. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, by the way, 1-800-825-5937. Bill has a question for Chris Milligan, the author or the editor of Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, good afternoon. I've always heard that John Kerry was a member of Skull and Bones. Is this true?
Yes, he is. He was a member, I think it was 66, somewhere in there, yes.
Well, how did he get tied up with these people?
Well, he was chosen when he was a junior at Yale University. And there are, seven secret societies there, three of them very, very prominent. He was a member. We've got written in the membership book.
So has he changed his outlook on life? Is this what happened? Or
was it just like an honor that it was bestowed upon?
It's more than an honor. I mean, Skull and Bones has its own building there. You go to meetings every Thursday and Sunday night, and it has its own island, and you have summer retreats on this island. It's a bit more than an honor. It helps people get to where they want to go.
That's the old boy network dimension of it, right?
It's an awful lot like an old boy network, but there is a deeper significance to it too. I mean, their symbol, the skull and bones. It's on bottles of poison, and used by the Nazi SS.
Yeah, I remember also these stories about George Bush's grandfather stealing Geronimo's skull for the Skull and Bones Society. Was that just a myth, or was there something to that?
All evidence leads that that was something that he did. It is in their own
Prescott
records. That is what he did. A person who was the chief of that tribe of Apaches did contact them. He has a picture of it. They tried to return some other bones that weren't the same bones that were shown in the picture. Prescott Bush was at the place where the bones were, and other members of Skull and Bones were also there in a regiment in Fort Sill, Kansas.
So they may still have them then?
Yes, there are people that say they do, and they also supposedly have Pancho Villa's bones and Harriet Tubman's and other people's also. And there are people that have been inside have said that the two things that disturbed them most were the there was one room that had a lot of Nazi memorabilia and then all the bones around.
Yeah, Vegantillion in our chat room wants to know if there's any relationship between this and the Bohemian Grove. But before we get to your answer to that, we've got Kenny in Alabama is patiently waiting on the phone. Kenny, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
How are you doing this afternoon, gentlemen?
Good.
Y'all were speaking earlier about the Masons, the secret society of the Masons. You know, really, I've never met a Mason that wasn't quite proud of the fact he was a Mason and pretty open about it.
Yeah, how secret can a secret society be if people advertise it, Chris?
Exactly. Well, most secret societies operate in a classic way in that they have a large group of people who know nothing about what goes on at the core of the secret society, and they are called porch brethren. And anytime you have a pyramidal organization where if somebody is a higher rank of you and you are supposed to do what they say, and you are under blood oath not to talk about it, an organization such as that can be used. And you know, most porch brethren have nothing, sinister, know anything what is going on. But these organizations have been used, and they can be shown in the historical record where they have been used in conspiratorial and in quite open. A quite open conspiracy to move history into the direction that certain people want.
Interesting. Kenny, thanks for the question. Dean in Santa Fe is on the line. Dean, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You are on the air.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Well, this corresponds with a lot of reading I've been doing lately. I've been reading Anthony Sutton's material on Skull and Bones and also how the Bolshevik Revolution was created by Skull and Bones members. I mean, I would never vote for a bonesman. I mean, I think what the author was just referring to is that there's a battery. Any secret society, a church, any cult has a battery of the masses, so to speak, of that cult that they draw on, the inner people that create the situations. And, Skull and Bones, while the people that might participate seem juvenile, and I think are, their effects are very real in the outward world, from what I've been able to discover. And I'd recommend that anyone read the writings of Carol Quigley, who wrote Tragedy and Hope, which examined the British version, the Order, I believe it's called, of this, and Rhodes and so on, the Rhodes Scholars. I mean, Rhodes on his deathbed said he wanted to return the colonies to Great Britain, meaning us.
Yeah.
So it's worth investigating because secret societies are a way of life and have been for centuries. And
worth checking out. Thank you, Dean. Thanks for your comments. Chris, one last question. What about the Bohemian Grove and its relationship to Skull and Bones? And then we got to move on here.
Well, there are members of Bones that do go to Bohemia Grove. Bohemia Grove does do some very interesting ceremonies that are based upon pagan rituals.
This is the thing that Ronald Reagan and Henry Kissinger were big in, right?
Yes, there's, most of the presidents have gone there from Eisenhower on up, and most of the major people that own are, they call them journalists, most of them are publicists, for this, how they see the future of the world, how they see, they feel that there's too much freedom. I mean, the basic lore that you get from looking at conspiracy theory, and this has been the lore from the late 1700s on up, is that the secret society, they do not care for our republic. They want to change our republic into more of a fascist state, more of a corporate-run state, and they wish to move the economic engine out of here. And if you go back in history and look at the history of secret societies, in the 1800s, there was developed this philosophy out of the secret societies called synarchism. And it was developed as a balance to anarchy, where in synarchy, is versus anarchy, where people are, or everything is just free, or whatever anarchy is. But this was, everything was controlled, and it was going to be controlled through the economic, the political, and the religious institutions, and those institutions were going to be in control of the secret societies.
Yeah.
And it is very much there in the historical record. I mean, it's very much like the early opium trade. A lot of these early opium dealers, in their public pronouncements of the day, they would say that they had nothing to do with it. But in the hindsight of history, these people have been dead for 200 years now. We have access to their records. We have access to their written records. And we can see that on one hand, while they were saying, no, we are having nothing to do with it, on the other hand, they had all kinds of companies and other things in front, and they were moving a lot of opium and made a lot of money.
And not just opium. If you look at the membership of the Union Banking Corporation, their 1932 director list, the Union Banking Corporation being, of course, the corporation that in the 40s was outed by President Roosevelt as supplying money and steel for Hitler and was shut down. The directors were E. Roland Harriman, who was a bonesman, Knight Woolley, who was a bonesman, Ellery Sedgwick James, who was a bonesman, H. J. Kelhoven, who was both a Nazi and a bonesman.
No, he wasn't a bonesman.
Oh, he wasn't?
No,
okay.
No, he was a Dutch person. He didn't go to Yale.
Okay. Johann Groninger, then, was probably not a bonesman either.
No.
And then the final director was Prescott Sheldon Bush.
Yes, yes. Well, Prescott Bush's father-in-law had started the bank in 1922 with Harriman. Okay, excuse me, 1924 with Harriman.
We've got to wrap it up here,
Chris.
And was
the president of it also.
Yeah, remarkable.
I've got quite a story about that.
Yeah, I'm sure, and it's in your book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. Chris Milligan, the editor of the book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. Thank you, Chris, for being on the program today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
The Radio Free Speed Zone.
Ed Zelenak in on the Radio Free Speech Show. Joining us is the smarter, the better looking, the funnier of the Smothers Brothers, the more talented Tom Smothers. You have brought comedy and social commentary to the living room on the television screen with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. Is there a place today for something like that, something where free speech can be intertwined with entertainment?
Free speech goes without saying, you would think, but we're censoring ourselves too much right now. The government has a point of view, and anybody that disagrees with it, you're not patriotic, you're a treasonous, you don't agree with the government's position. And that's what happened back in the 60s, and it's happening again now. So it's kind of depressing in that way.
They almost wrapped the First Amendment in an impermeable shell of patriotism.
Aha, that's right. The only person that has a right to say anything is them. This is great to be out where people don't talk over you and be rude to you.
The Radio Free Speech Zone, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're back. It's Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks and the Republican National Committee. But we caught somebody else doing something right. Yes, indeed, folks. Another jolly good fellow. The whole idea being that the best way to encourage the behavior you want is to salute it. Today's Caught You Doing Something Right is MoveOn.org. I got an email here from Mark in Birmingham, Alabama, and he says, MoveOn.org sent out an action alert today asking their members to email Meet the Press to tell them not to let statements by people like William Sapphire go unchallenged. Sunday, Sapphire had harsh words for Senator Kennedy in light of his criticism of the neocons. Well, about 800 people, Mark writes, including myself, sent angry emails to Meet the Press, and a few minutes ago, MoveOn.org sent us this message. Dear Media Corps members, congratulations to everyone who called or emailed Tim Russert this morning. After hearing from over 800 of you in a few hours, NBC's Meet the Press contacted us to discuss William Sapphire's untrue comments on Sunday. They got the message. So, well done. Congratulations to MoveOn.org. So, that's our Caught Doing Something Right for the week, and I encourage you in your relations with others to always look for opportunities to catch people doing things right. Chris in Tampa writes in, can you comment on the air about how every neighbor outside this country lambasted Bush's speech while the media here had mostly praise for it? You know, I thought that was really interesting, Chris. She said, I'm not sure if you or she, Chris. Chris also said, what are the odds that the UN will bail out Bush despite the U.S. maintaining complete control? I think the odds are about zero, but he will get some things. I mean, there is still the hope of multilateralism within the United States. They would like to have us as friends, but they're not going to sacrifice their children for us. I don't think in large number. But anyhow, every newspaper in the country in the world lambasting Bush. If you go to commondreams.org. www.commondreams.org. Down the left-hand side, there's a great list of newspapers all over the world, and you can just click on them and read the headlines. And if you go back to yesterday's papers or the day before's papers, you'll see some really startling, in many of these newspapers, just startling responses to George Bush's speech before the United Nations, responses that were by and large not reported here in the United States. I thought that was quite extraordinary. Gary in St. Joseph, Missouri writes, your guest from conservativesagainstbush.com and his peers, I think, are the answer to the 2004 election. The disenfranchised traditional conservatives need to be encouraged to jump ship. Yes, Gary, and we're going to keep on talking to them. Our program today has been produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta and engineered by Shar Jones in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today and tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place.
On the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.